Are you tired of our country's partisan and divisive approach to politics? We are too, and we believe there's a better way. Like you, we want our nation to be a place where the vulnerable are protected, religious liberty is defended, families can flourish, and the gospel is proclaimed. We believe that Christians have a critical role to play this year and every year in the public square. Join us on April 22nd for Bringing Hope to an Election Year, Christian Political Engagement in 2024 and Beyond. ERLC President Brent Leatherwood and Daniel Darling, Director of the Land Center for Cultural Engagement at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, will provide guidance for engaging the chaotic public square, discuss their issues of concern for this election cycle, and remind us of our anchor and hope as Christians.
You're listening to the ERLC podcast. Last night, my wife went out to eat dinner, and while she was gone, I cut my son's hair all off. And I don't know if last time you saw Jackson, but his hair was like basically as long as Julie's, and now it's less than
really?
Yeah, almost. It's probably seven inches.
It's very long.
Now it's less than an inch.
And what did your wife say when she saw it?
She cried. I filmed it.
It's hilarious.
Josh!
You cut your son's hair without telling your wife. You filmed it and she cried?
Yeah,
wait, to be fair, they've been talking about this for a long time.
Yeah, it wasn't like a total surprise. Hello and welcome back to this week's episode of the ERLC podcast, where every week we're talking about our work here at the ERLC and focusing on what Christians need to know about the things going on in the world. I'm Josh Wester, and with me in the virtual studio today are my co-hosts. We'll start with Julie Masson.
Good morning from snowy Kansas City.
Is it really snowy there?
Yeah.
How much did you guys get?
We don't have a lot. I want more, but it's snowy here.
And next up, we have Megan Smith, the podcast ninja.
Hello there.
Always a quaint hello from Megan. And guys, I'm so excited to talk to Brent Leatherwood. What's up, man?
I mean, I'm always excited to talk to you, Josh, as well as you, Megan, and Julie. Well, I live in a perpetual state of excitement.
Perpetual state of excitement. I like it. So it's going to be a fun show today. We've got a lot to talk about. Julie's going to give us one more time that ERLC content rundown and look at some of the feedback we've gotten this week. We are going to, later in the show, talk to our colleague Chelsea Soblik, who is no stranger to the podcast, and she is in our DC office and is going to update us on all of the all things pro-life that the ERLC has been doing recently.
Josh, I noticed in your opening there, you said Julie's going to do this for us one more time. Why is that? Is there a development?
Well, the good news is for all these podcast listeners that Lindsay, while still on the vacation we joked about, she is ready to come back to the podcast. I actually talked to her yesterday, and so she's going to be back with us next week, which is really exciting.
There you go. There you have it.
I get one more week.
So, big times on the podcast. Excited to welcome Lindsay back next week, but very excited about today's show as well. We will get to that conversation with Chelsea later on in the episode, but for now, Julie, tell us what's going on with the ERLC this week.
All right. I will do one more review of what the ERLC has been sharing on our social media platforms, and I hope you enjoy it. Okay, we're going to start with Facebook. So on Tuesday of this week, we shared this post, and it reads, "This morning, Russell Moore sent a letter to congressional leadership advocating for keeping pro-life protections like the Hyde Amendment in our federal budget. By the end of the day, the DC team had delivered the letter to all 535 offices in the House and Senate, ensuring that lawmakers know Southern Baptists are unwaveringly pro-life and that these protections save lives and protect consciences." And JD and Lori T said, "Thank you, Dr. Moore and ERLC team, for advocating for the values of SBC congregations." Jerry C said, "Thank you, Dr. Moore, for advocating for the protection of all life." And those comments really made me happy because this was the focus of our past week. And it's always a focus of the ERLC, but there were some particular things happening in DC that warranted us speaking up about life.
Julie, I'm really glad that you highlighted that because it's one of those things where, thanks to you and your team, we get to let the public know about this kind of what is often behind the scenes work that we're doing in terms of interfacing with both the White House and with Congress. And so this is one of those ways that we are communicating the positions of Southern Baptists and advocating for the things that Southern Baptists believe right there in D.C. And honestly, I was shocked. Big shout out to JD and Lori, who are real fans of the podcast. And also, I mean, I was just shocked by the response of this guy, because people, having seen this, you know, they were responding to the news that we had done this, and they seemed to demonstrate a lot more interest than I was anticipating, which was just really encouraging to me to know that people really do, like, they're excited about the work that we're doing.
And I talked with Travis Wusso, who heads up our team in D.C., and he was just talking about the great response that we actually got from members of Congress with this letter. So, you know, folks who follow us, they may know that we routinely send letters that are important to Southern Baptists to the members of leadership on Capitol Hill and just everyday members of Congress. And this is an important part of our strategy in communicating what it is that Southern Baptists have spoken to, either in the Baptist Faith and Message or through SBC resolutions. But it was really encouraging, not only the response that we saw when we shared this news publicly, but also the response that we got from members of Congress on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, and in that same vein, we also shared an explainer about the Hyde Amendment, which we just talked about a little bit. And I'm going to have Josh go into more detail about that. But this is what we shared in our Facebook post about the explainer. Policies like these are still needed today. Preventing taxpayer dollars from abortion protects consciences, saves lives, and respects the freedom of Americans to seek to persuade one another without state-sanctioned conscience intrusion. Every person is made in the image of God, and the United States has a responsibility to reflect that truth in its laws. Josh, can you give us some background on the Hyde Amendment?
Sure. I think it'll be important to note that we're recording this on Thursday, and we actually just published a piece called Five Pro-Life Riders that are these riders that are attached to different bills that are making their way through Congress that are specifically there to protect consciences so that people aren't complicit or the taxpayer funds aren't used to pay for abortions. And so the Hyde Amendment is one of those riders. It has been around, I think, since the 1960s, and it's attached to appropriations bills, which basically are the legislation that Congress uses to fund all the things that the federal government does. They have to pass these appropriations bills annually. And as they're doing that, the Hyde Amendment protects or prohibits the use of these federal funds that are, you know, generated through taxpayer revenues or taxpayer dollars from going to fund abortions or to promote abortion, like pro-choice ideology. And so that's a really important thing that the Hyde Amendment does. And it's something that has been enjoyed bipartisan support for decades. It is under threat right now. So it's something that we need to pay a lot of attention to. And it's something that the ERLC is going to try to continue to lead the fight in seeking to preserve the Hyde Amendment.
Thanks for explaining that, Josh. I, for one, actually needed an explainer internally about what the Hyde Amendment was when we were starting to plan some of our content around this. So thank you. All right, we're going to move over to Twitter. On Twitter, we shared this tweet. It's a press release. Dr. Moore calls Congress to save lives and protect American consciences by continuing the 44-year bipartisan support of the Hyde Amendment. So this tweet reached over 83,000 people. It kind of exploded. It did really well. And I wanted to share this, one, because it reiterates, again, the important life work we are doing, but also it highlights our fabulous press team of Elizabeth Bristow and Jill Wagner. And they write these press releases and they make sure that the right people in the media are aware of some of the work we are doing. Brent, can you jump in and talk a little bit about how we engage the media and why we do that, especially on issues like this?
Yeah, Julie, it is obviously it's important for us to not only be communicating with our churches and just getting continual feedback from them, but it's also important for us to project that out to the wider watching world. And, you know, just like with any organization or individual like Dr. Moore, who is in the public square, it behooves us to work with folks in media, reporters, writers, et cetera, to help communicate the message that we have been privileged to deliver on behalf of our SBC churches. And so, yeah, that is a continual thing that we do. And the media team that we have with Elizabeth Bristow and Jill Wagner and the other parts of our organization that help, whether it's developing quotes or writing things that we include in our press releases. It's just a very important tactic that we use to, again, communicate that broader message that we are privileged to do as we carry out our ministry assignment.
I do love our press team. They do a great job, and I enjoy working with them. They're fabulous. On Twitter, I was very thankful to see David French quote tweeted that press release, and he said, "Well said, Dr. Moore and ERLC." And then our old colleague, Dan Darling, also quote tweeted it and said, "Thankful for the effective and faithful pro-life advocacy of the ERLC." So thank you to both of those guys for that. All right, we're going to round out this category by moving to Instagram. If I hadn't said it yet, this is my favorite platform. And if you're not following us on Instagram yet, you should be. We're on Instagram at ERLCSBC. And you can follow Russell Moore on Instagram at Russell Moore. So on Instagram this past week, we shared an Instagram story about our congressional letter so that people could read it in its entirety. And people like Brent who don't use Instagram stories might not know this, but if you see an Instagram story and you want to read the whole thing, you can actually click and hold and then it will pause the story. So FYI, for any of you who don't know how to engage with Instagram stories, that's how you do it. So you were able to read our congressional letter that was posted right there. Brian C. sent us a direct message about that and said, "Thank you, Russell Moore. We need to take a stand for life and the unborn." Benjamin Watson was a speaker at our Evangelicals for Life conference that we had last week, and we shared one of his picture quotes, or I guess we can just call it a quote. And he said, "We truly need to understand that our purpose in a pro-life movement is not necessarily only to save preborn children, but to ultimately point people to Christ." We got lots of yeses and hand clap emojis on that one. And Megan was the person who kind of let out on Evangelicals for Life. And I would love to hear what she has to say about that fabulous event last week.
I loved Benjamin Watson's talk. Amongst all the talks from EFL, from Lauren McAfee, and from Dr. Moore and the policy panel, I always love hearing from Benjamin Watson. We think of him as a football player, but he is so passionate about life. And it really is just... it's just encouraging, and I feel like every time I hear him speak on life, him or his wife, there's just an urgency in his voice about how we need to act on these things.
And for the folks who may have missed it, come for the great words from Benjamin Watson. Stay for the very end to get a preview from Elizabeth Graham on kind of where our life work is going over the next couple of years. It's just a brief little kind of TED talk that she does at the end of our Evangelicals for Life event. And it was so good to just let folks know we're now entering into an important 2-year time frame here. And I would commend it highly.
And if you want to keep up on our life work at the ERLC, you should go to erlc.com/standforlife. You can get a little bit of a rundown of what we're doing in the life space. And then also you can become an email subscriber and we'll keep you updated on all the important things on this issue. So the last thing I'm going to share from Instagram is we shared a video from Hunter Melton, who's a pastor in Brentwood, Tennessee. And his church partnered with a local school to help provide a food pantry for their local community. They also passed out baggies of coloring pages and crayons that presented the gospel, and they did this through a public school. So I thought this was a really cool story. This comes from our series of videos we've been sharing about pastors and ministry leaders and how they are serving amidst COVID in their local communities. Chad M. commented on this video and said, "This guy is the real deal. Thanks for serving." I don't know Hunter Melton, but Chad M. does and said he's pretty amazing. And Brent, I'm wondering if you know him, since I think you go to the same church.
That's right. So I could do a whole podcast singing the praises of Hunter Melton, who serves as our discipleship minister at the church at Avenue South. He is fantastic and totally want to retweet or regram whatever it is that Chad just said here, because Hunter is the real deal. He is just constantly innovating and coming up with ways, particularly in this pandemic, to make new connections for the members of Avenue South. And we need to have him on the podcast. As a matter of fact, he and his wife, who is a nationally known voice in Christian radio, both of them actually need to come on and join us on the podcast at some point. But this is a great post that we did, and I'm so glad that we highlighted Hunter Melton.
Now, Brent, do you know how to regram something?
Yeah, I don't even know if regram is the word, but I just, you know, go down and...
Do you know how to post an Instagram story?
You know, usually what I do is I will just take a, like a screenshot of something I like and like send it to, you know, my wife or send it to Josh, be like, hey, this is cool.
So you just send something you see, you send to a real person that you know in real life instead of just posting it on social media.
Yeah.
I approve, actually.
Well, I've actually learned from you, do not take screenshots from your Instagram and then go put them on Twitter. That's like a social media no-no.
The bigger no-no that people do is they post screenshots of their tweet and post them on Instagram.
Okay.
And
well, that's what no-no. I meant. That's what I meant. Whatever.
Okay.
You know.
Well,
see,
all
you guys
about,
didn't
I
know
think...
this, but Julie is like the social media cop at the ERLC, and she's constantly telling us,
I'll own it.
You know, what to do and not to do. One thing that is frowned upon in our organization, apparently, is taking your own tweet and texting it to somebody else so that they can see that you tweeted this thing. That's
it's something that
do.
The dudes do. The girls don't.
It
do
is something
this.
The dudes do.
Yeah, well, I mean, Julie, I would say Julie is instead of a social media cop, she's more like a social media dentist. She wants us to practice good hygiene in our social media use.
I'll own that. Well, that is my rundown of ERLC social media. It has been my pleasure to join you all these past few weeks and give you a little insight into the social media world of the ERLC. It can be a little messy. It can be a little bit sad and depressing at times, but it can also be really encouraging to read what people have to say to us. So thanks for letting me drop on by, guys.
Well, we just want to say thanks so much to Julie for doing that, because only from like a social media wizard can you hear about people's responses, including emojis like, you know, clapping hands and smiley faces. So that's pretty awesome. Also, Julie, you didn't know this, but we have talked about it behind the scenes. We would love for you to drop back by with us occasionally to give us these looks at what's going on. Because, you know, our content mostly, like when Lindsay's doing it, we're talking about what the ERLC is putting out there into the world. It is really cool to know how people are responding to that. So we are going to hopefully make that a recurring segment on the podcast, as long as you're willing.
Oh, well, I didn't sign up for that, but I'll consider it. Let me talk to my agent.
Okay. Well, I'll have my people talk to your people, and we will work it out. So, Brent, that takes us to the culture section for the week. So tell us what's going on.
Yeah. So I want to start this week with a story that comes out of the UK. And these kinds of stories always fascinate me when you hear about them. But just especially in this the world that we live in right now, I think this is just a really unique jumping off point for discussion. So from the news outlet, the Times News Online, a teenager who slipped into an 11-month coma after a deadly accident woke up recently with no knowledge of the COVID-19 pandemic. Joseph Flavel was hit by a car while he was walking through Burton in Staffordshire. The incident happened on March 1st, 3 weeks before the coronavirus lockdown came into effect in the UK. Joseph's family members were thrilled to see his recovery this week, but now they are wondering how to explain the need for lockdowns and social distancing to him. So, y'all, I have to know, how would you explain this world that we live in with masks and social distancing and phased-in vaccinations for someone who just woke up from a coma?
I read this article, Brent. It was fascinating. I just sat back on my couch and was like, huh. Like, to think how long it took us to ramp up and get used to some of these words and like protocols, and suddenly this kid is having to learn it all immediately. And it even said he can't even see his family currently. They can't come to see him because of the pandemic. So imagine waking up, you can't even see your family. You just see doctors and you're learning about this. I don't even know. What do you say? Watch this I Am Legend movie and this is basically where we're at.
So props to Megan for the I Am Legend reference. This reminds me, So at some point during the pandemic, we were also experiencing all of these wildfires in California, and there was this crazy picture of these fires burning, and you could see, it was like in the backdrop, so the picture was of the Golden Gate Bridge, and in the backdrop, you could see these fires raging. And then also, like somebody said at the time, like imagine trying to explain this to people where you could see these people in this photograph who are wearing masks, and they see this these wildfires near the Golden Gate Bridge, and so trying to say, hey, now the masks are actually totally a separate thing from the fire you see raging in the background. It's an insane time. So trying to introduce somebody to all of that at once, I have no idea. This is, again, the Jim Gaffigan, you're drowning and somebody throws you a baby. There's just no way to be ready for this.
I think you'd have to explain, okay, look, there was this virus. Most of the world thought it wasn't going to happen. Turns out it was real. Oh, and then by the way, 6 months in when things were really bad, there were still people who didn't think it was real. But if you went down that path, the guy's going to be more confused. So I don't know. Do you pick, which storyline do you pick? There's so many.
Well, the storyline that you don't pick is that all of this was caused by a space laser. We'll get to that later in the podcast. But anyways, I think that those are fantastic ways to try and acclimate somebody to this reality. But prayers for his family, for him and his recovery, and just trying to explain all this to him. All right, so looking actually at COVID numbers, they are improving in the U.S. Axios reported this week that new coronavirus infections slowed by nearly 16% over the past week, continuing a trend of rapid improvement. As a matter of fact, it's 2 weeks in a row that infections have slowed by 16%, which is really good news. That said, the U.S. still has a ton of coronavirus raging across the land, and there's still the potential for dark days ahead. But as Axios notes, this is progress, and the improvement is significant. If this trend keeps going, the country will be in a far better and safer position as vaccines continue to roll out. But as they note in another story, we're still not out of the woods. New variants are racing across the globe, and who is spreading it here in the U.S.? They report that adults aged 20 to 49 were responsible for the vast majority of virus transmission last year, even after schools reopened in the fall, according to a new study that was published in Science magazine. The U.S. vaccination effort is racing to keep up with the spread of new, more transmissible variants of the virus. Millions more of Americans could be infected before a substantial portion of the population is vaccinated, making transmission patterns deeply relevant. So, obviously, there's a lot going on to this. As we tend to say here, continue to take this seriously, and hopefully we can make it through that. There was another development. Last week, we told you about a new CDC report that was stressing that schools should be able to reopen so long as they take protocols seriously and follow them. Well, this week, the CDC did it again. ABC News is reporting that the head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said on Wednesday, it could be possible to get back to school safely without hinging the return to classrooms on vaccines. Quote, there is increasing data to suggest that schools can safely reopen and that safe reopening does not suggest that teachers need to be vaccinated in order to reopen safely, the CDC Director Rochelle Walensky told reporters at a briefing. The Biden administration plans to work with states and localities on ensuring schools can open safely in the U.S. by prioritizing teachers' vaccinations, enabling widespread testing, and providing additional guidance for school administrators on things like how to improve ventilation and PPE. The administration has proposed more than $170 billion for both K-12 schools and higher education institutions as part of this proposal. So there's a lot to cover there. But needless to say, we're in a current state where coronavirus numbers are on a downward trend, which is good. That said, there are new variants that are increasing across the globe, so we need to continue taking this seriously. But as we have gotten in more data, it suggests that schools can reopen safely so long as they follow safety protocols as laid out by the CDC and health experts in the various states. So taken together, we're doing better. Let's just try and get through these next few weeks.
I was talking with Joe from the Good Book Company earlier this morning, and we were discussing COVID and the different things that are going on in each country. And he made the point that the UK is not looking very good right now because of all the different variants that they're testing for. He said, but our methods for testing are really good. And so he's like, well, that's a good thing, but it doesn't look good for us. So I just thought that was interesting. I know the UK has really been doing a lot of good things in terms of the research that is happening on the vaccines and everything related to COVID. So I thought that was an interesting discussion, but I always love chatting with Joe from the Good Book Company. He's a good friend of the organization.
That's right. And they are over in the UK. And I should note, I heard on a report this morning that they're actually in the top three across the globe in terms of the vaccinations that they've been able to get out, which is, hey, good on you, Englishmen and women.
Now, I have to add in there, did you guys hear, do you remember the story about the, I think he was the 100-year-old World War II vet early on in the pandemic. He was walking. Did you hear that story? He was walking and raising money for something. He got COVID and he died this week. And I was sad to hear that.
He was walking, I think it was like last March or April. He pledged to walk something like 100 laps in his backyard to raise money. And he raised a substantial amount of money for frontline healthcare workers in the UK. And it was revealed this week that he had tested positive for COVID. And then in the middle of the week, he had passed away from that. So that was a sad note, to say the least. But again, we got to take this seriously. All right, turning to events on Capitol Hill. On Thursday, CBS News reports the House is set to vote on a measure stripping controversial GOP Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene from her committee assignments as House Democrats seek to punish the Republican lawmaker for a litany of incendiary comments and force GOP members to either condemn or defend her. So as background, in social media posts and videos made before she was elected to Congress, Greene, a freshman from Georgia, embraced a slew of far-right conspiracy theories, including questioning whether deadly school shootings had been staged. A supporter of the fantastical QAnon conspiracy theory, she's also shared videos with anti-Semitic and anti-Muslim sentiment and expressed support for violence against Democratic leaders in Congress. So when I mentioned earlier space lasers, one of the things that appeared on her Facebook feed was this wild theory that those California wildfires that Josh had mentioned before were actually strategically started by a space laser that was owned by a Jewish board member of a private company. I mean, really kind of wild out there stuff. And so that is in addition to some of these other theories that she seems to be supportive of. And so Democrats who are in the majority in the House of Representatives have called for action to be taken to strip her of her new committee assignments that were given to her by Republicans, which are the House Education Committee and the House Budget Committee. That vote is going to be happening soon as we record this.
Yeah, Brent, honestly, it's hard to believe that this is a situation that we're actually facing, because what we're talking about is a person who is a member of Congress, you know, duly elected, who has fostered and spread some of the wildest conspiracy theories imaginable. And while, you know, the reporting from yesterday says that she expressed some kind of remorse or some kind of apology for those words, I think that it's important that, you know, at the ERLC, we speak a lot about the need to restore trust in our institutions. And certainly that applies greatly to members of the United States Congress. And as Christians, we want to be people who are about the truth, who seek to advance the truth. And we have just seen evidence mounting like crazy. CNN just released a story yesterday that was really, really good about a woman who had her life destroyed by the QAnon conspiracy theory. And so while we're facing this situation, I think that it's important for us to recognize that we should expect more from our elected officials. We should expect them to be people who have some kind of moral seriousness, and that they demonstrate some kind of unwillingness to spread these kind of false and oftentimes egregious conspiracies, outright fabricated lies about our fellow Americans, some of whom have suffered deep, deep tragedy, and sometimes to advance things as wicked as anti-Semitism. I mean, there is really no place for that in Congress, and there's no excuse for anyone, Republican or Democrat, to embrace or to stoke that kind of misinformation or false information trafficking. It makes our public it poisons public discourse and makes our world and our country worse, not better.
It will be interesting. Senator Mitt Romney said this week, you know, the Republican Party is a big tent. And so it includes a lot of people with a lot of different beliefs. But once you start kind of trafficking in some of these wild, outlandish theories that, you know, frankly dehumanize certain groups of people out there, Senator Romney was suggesting that probably needs to be outside the tent. So it'll be interesting to see what actually happens procedurally with this vote, where Republicans end up landing, and whether all Democrats will end up voting for this. It's going to be a pretty fascinating thing to watch if you follow politics. So this follows a Wednesday night vote by Republicans to keep Congresswoman Liz Cheney as the number three member of their leadership as the head of the House Republican Conference. So CNN is reporting that they voted Wednesday night that Cheney should keep her post. And after she defended her support for impeachment as a vote of conscience during a contentious closed-door GOP conference meeting. The secret ballot vote took place after some Republicans argued that Cheney should be removed from leadership following her support for impeaching then-President Donald Trump for inciting an insurrection at the Capitol. In the end, however, Cheney prevailed by a wide margin. The vote was 145 votes to keep her in her position as House Republican Conference Chair and 61 to remove her. Look, whatever you think about the way that Congresswoman Cheney voted, to me, the fact that she is saying, no, this was a vote of conscience, and nine other Republican members of the House voted with her, that I think says something. And the fact that she now got 145 votes, a majority, a strong majority of her conference to support her, is you know, just interesting in light of all the other votes that Republicans are taking. Speaking of interesting developments, so this was an interesting week in SBC life. This was not a normal week for us at the RLC. We mentioned several months ago that there was a committee looking into the work that we do as an organization. As we mentioned at the time, we weren't afraid of the report that would eventually become, because we stand behind the work that we do on behalf of Southern Baptists. We've never claimed to be a perfect organization, but we do stand behind all that we do, and it is an honor to serve Southern Baptists at the RLC. So we're not really going to go into the details of the findings here, but we will read you a statement from our chairman of our board of trustees. His name is Dr. David Prince. He's a pastor in Kentucky, and he said this: "I think Southern Baptists can see this report for exactly what it is and are ready to move on from this moment and focus on our mission together. The RLC has served Southern Baptists faithfully during a time of political, cultural, and in some cases, denominational chaos. Much of this chaos remains with us, including widespread news of many of our Black and Brown brothers and sisters leaving the SBC. That should be alarming to all of us." As we said, the report is available online, and you can read it, make your own judgments about it. But just let us say, we agree with Chairman Prince. We think people can see the report for what it is. And truthfully, that has become even more clear in the days since the report was released. It was released on Monday. We are so thankful and appreciative for the support that folks have sent to us or messaged us online. And we would, of course, welcome your prayers as this just kind of continues to work its way through kind of denominational procedures. But the biggest thing that is on our minds is the work that we've been called to do. And let me just say again, it's an honor to serve Southern Baptists in culture, in courtrooms, and on Capitol Hill. And this is a really important time for us to be focused on that work.
You know, there are several of us on staff at the ERLC that are thankful that we get to engage with people who contact us. So if you are someone who has a question for us, we are accessible in multiple formats. You can contact us at info@erlc.com. My team personally responds to the many direct messages that we get. We've got a couple of people who answer phone calls. And so we welcome any questions you have, and we're happy to answer those questions and engage with you that way.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, both from Julie and Brent. Look, it is an honor to serve Southern Baptist. All of us are Southern Baptists. We're proud of our denomination. And also we're proud to work at the ERLC and of the work that we do. And so we also know, we hear from you guys who listen to the podcast all the time, and you're incredibly supportive of the work that we do. And we are so grateful for that. So I just want to echo what Brent said there and to say, you know, thank you. We're going to continue to be focused on the good work that we are doing, because honestly, it's a really important time for us to stay focused and keep our heads in the game. And that's where they are.
All right. So not only was it an important week for the ERLC, but it was an important week for a few of our Baptist State Convention partners. So according to Baptist Press, in Indiana, Steve McNeil has announced his retirement as executive director for the State Convention of Baptists in Indiana, and that will be effective on June 30th. And then in Texas, a search committee has put forth the name of Nathan Lorick to be the new SBTC executive director in Texas. I've had the opportunity to meet Steve McNeil several times. He does great work for Baptists in Indiana. And Nathan Lorick, he's currently serving as the state executive in Colorado. He's originally from Texas, and he's been doing great work for the last couple of years in Colorado. And so if this is something that gets voted on, it's or affirmed, I should say, in a vote, it's obviously a great pickup for Baptists in Texas. So obviously some major developments happening this week.
Yeah, we'll just say congratulations to Steve McNeil on his retirement. And man, maybe a huge congratulations also to Baptist in Texas if they are able to lock down Nathan Lorick, who is really one of the best. I mean, he's one of the best among us in terms of Southern Baptist leaders. And this is just an incredibly exciting move for him. And also, you know, he's done such great work in Colorado that I'm sure that that association or that convention is set up to bring in someone else to continue on in that path and stewardship. And so in some ways, it's a really exciting time for some things happening in SBC life.
Okay, well, moving on to some lighter fare. ABC 11 News, a local affiliate of ABC, it reports this. If you did not get a good night's sleep, you are not alone. Google says searches about strange dreams, sleep, and insomnia are at an all-time high. Many people have reported having stranger dreams than they had before the COVID-19 lockdowns began. They recommend in the article, in order to help get a better night's rest, doctors recommend you start winding down as soon as the sun starts to set, make your bedroom a sleep sanctuary, and keep your room cool and pitch black. And avoid working in bed. Well, as someone with three little ones running around the house, I think I begin my bedtime routine at about 5 p.m. anyways. I haven't had some of these strange dreams, but we have talked about this before where people are reporting like the most bizarre dreams while COVID has been with us.
I've had some weird ones, but I feel like I need to share a trick with you guys that I've been trying out the past week to help me sleep. And you're probably going to laugh, but I'm really, really, really bad at math. But I have found that math has helped me sleep lately. This is what I'm doing. I do 2 plus 2 is 4, 4 plus 4 is 8, 8 plus 8 is 16. And I do that. And once I get too high, like in the triple digits, my brain shuts off. It's like my brain says, oh, you don't know how to do math. You can go to sleep. So one night I thought I would do a harder version, and I did 3 times 3 is 9, 9 times 9, and then I quit because I couldn't figure it out. So I would just like to give that as a recommendation. If you can't sleep, try math. If you're bad at math, it will help your brain shut off.
Julie, that is fascinating. I've never heard of anybody doing that. That takes counting sheep, I think, to a new level. But I have to confess that I actually woke up this morning from a dream, a very stressful dream about the podcast recording today. And oh, no. I don't remember all the details, but I woke up and I knew I had been dreaming about how the podcast was going to happen, all the logistics, the recording, the setup, all of it. So I do have stressful dreams. I've had friends, even in the last week, tell me some of the most bizarre dreams. So this article was fascinating. And to know it's not just me, it's not just my friends, it's happening everywhere.
Everywhere. It's true.
It makes me feel a little better because I was one of those people telling Megan about my crazy dreams.
There have been some crazy coworker dreams too. Like just having dreams with coworkers, and one of them was two people were in Switzerland playing handbells. It's just crazy. So the things we dream, I don't get
it. So wait, were these two of our coworkers who dreamed about handbells in Switzerland?
Yes. Chelsea, who will be on here later, had a dream that two of us were in Switzerland playing handbells.
Okay.
With her.
All right.
Please remind me to take that up in conversation. That's much more pleasant than my dream, though, even though handbells are maybe not something that will survive the eschaton.
Hey, right, I used to play handbells in real life, just so you know. I was on the handbell church choir.
All right. Well, by the way, Julie, 9 times 9 is 81. So there you go.
Well, I was stumped.
Okay, well, this last section, it actually is for you, Julie Masson. It has nothing to do with math. It has everything to do with Super Bowl Sunday, which is coming up.
That's right,
this coming Sunday. So NBC News reports, or NBC Sports reports, that 25,000 actual fans will be allowed in the stands for the Super Bowl that's taking place in Tampa Bay, along with 30,000 cardboard cutouts. Just to try and make it look like a little bit more of a full stadium, as the Kansas City Chiefs, Julie's Kansas City Chiefs, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers face off in Super Bowl 55. It kicks off on February 7th at approximately 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, and I'm hoping for a good game. I do kind of want to see a Patrick Mahomes victory. So let's just go around the horn here real quick. Who you got, Josh? Who do you want to win? What's your final score prediction?
Yeah, man, I got to tell you, I think that watching Patrick Mahomes is super fun and that it is really an interesting story to watch basically two superstars, but one who was, you know, in diapers when the other was winning Super Bowls. I don't know. I'm interested to see this, you know, old versus young thing match up, and I want to root against Tom Brady because that's just what I want to do, but I'll enjoy the game either way.
Okay, so what's your final score prediction?
Bro, I've got nothing. I'll say 42-36.
Who?
Chiefs.
Okay,
come on, there that's we go. Right.
All right. Megan, who you got?
I was trying to base this off some data, and now I'm put on the spot here. I think I'm not going with the Chiefs. Sorry, Julie. My real question about this article and about the cutouts is that did it tell if the cutouts or whoever is, do you get to pay for that? Do you have to pay the same price to have your cutout in the stand as an actual Super Bowl ticket? Because I'm looking up the price of Super Bowl tickets historically, and if you have to pay like $4,000 for a cutout to not even be there, whoa.
Wait, so people are paying for those cardboard cutouts? I thought they were just being placed there.
That's what you can do at other sporting events.
Who would pay for that?
Yeah, you can pay to have your face like at every Tennessee Vols basketball game.
Okay, well, what I want to know about the cardboard cutouts are... Or is there going to be one section of the stadium that's cardboard cutouts and one section real? Or is it going to be one real person?
It's going to be interspersed. Interspersed throughout the stadium to encourage social distancing for the live fans that are actually showing up.
Okay, that makes sense.
So y'all have absolutely derailed my kind of going around the horn here. So Megan, we don't actually have a score from you. So we'll let you think about that for a minute. Julie, what is your score prediction?
Chiefs 32, Bucks 14.
Nice. Okay, I've got Chiefs 42, and Tom Brady and the Buccaneers get 17. That's what I've got. So I feel like Tom Brady, this will be his final humiliation. And to disappoint Dean and Sarah out there, I think Tom Brady will retire after the game.
I'm on board with that. I can get behind that for sure.
So sorry to offend our loyal listener, Dean and Sarah out of Tallahassee, Florida, but I think this is the end of the Tom Brady era.
Agreed.
All right, Megan, what's your final score prediction?
Okay, I'm going with the Bucks, and I'm going 42-35.
Amazing. Wow.
Going Megan, against the grain right there. Have you ever seen Patrick Mahomes play?
They're at home. Come on. I just think they have some advantages going on here.
I think you're wrong.
We shall see.
If the Bucks win, they would actually go from worst to first because they were the worst team in the NFL last year. So that actually would be amazing.
An underdog story.
And if you're not first, you're last.
There you go. All right. Well, this segment has gone on way too long, and so I apologize. But Megan, Julie, Josh, that's your look at this week in culture.
So now we're about to talk to probably the most frequent guest star of the ERLC podcast, Chelsea Sobolik from our DC office. Chelsea is one of our policy directors, and she's also just kind of the go-to person for all things pro-life happening in our DC office and in terms of pro-life policy. And so we wanted to talk to Chelsea today just to get an update because there have been a tremendous amount of things with a new administration incoming in the first several days, plus the March for Life. There's a lot to talk about. So we wanted to get an update from Chelsea on what's going on in the pro-life world. So Chelsea, they already know who you are. They know what you do. We've talked to your husband. We have really gotten to know you pretty well across the podcast. And so to start with, we'll just jump in and talk about the March for Life. Because of COVID this year, everything is different, including the March for Life. It was actually virtual. And a lot of people are going to say, what even is a virtual march? Which I get. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people show up in DC every year to do the March for Life. And this year, we didn't get to do that. But you guys in our DC office actually did get to participate in what I called a mini march. And so would you tell us a little bit about that? JD Greer was there. Tell us what that was like. And just, you know, give us a rundown.
Yeah, Josh, like you said, the March for Life this year was virtual. For the first time since 1974, when the March for Life began right after the Roe versus Wade decision, the March for Life was much different this year due to security concerns and COVID. So the March for Life organization encouraged folks to march virtually, which essentially meant, please don't come to Washington. March locally with your communities, outside, masked up, socially distanced, safely, but don't come to Washington, D.C. However, there was a very small march in Washington, D.C.,
like a mini march.
Like a mini march. just like it. So it was small. It was probably less than 100 folks outside, masked, socially distanced. But like you said, the Southern Baptist Convention president, J.D. Greer, was there. So we got to chat with him and catch up with him. Benjamin Watson, who was one of our presenters at our recent EFL conference, was also there. So we got to see him. And Ben is a big guy, and I felt quite small walking next to him in the march. But no, it was great. We walked up to the Supreme Court, and because of the barriers in Washington right now, we were not able to go to the front of the Supreme Court. It's fenced off. So we walked to the back of the Supreme Court, and they had handed out roses, and we laid those roses at the back of the Supreme Court in honor of in remembrance of the lives lost to abortion.
Chelsea, I think anybody standing next to Benjamin Watson is going to look and feel small. So
tiny.
I just wanted to, he's a big dude. To validate you. He's a big guy. I loved seeing the pictures of, I think it was J.D. Greer who had the rose and laid it there. I think that was a really cool moment and a really neat gesture that they did.
Last week, we saw that the president rescinded the Mexico City policy. Tell us what that is and why it matters.
Yeah, so this particular policy is kind of like a policy football, if you will, between administrations. So this policy prevents American taxpayer dollars from subsidizing abortion abroad. So it won't go to NGOs that promote or provide abortion. It was expanded by the Trump administration to be a little bit broader than it's been in years past. But again, it's used as a political football. So President Clinton rescinded it. President Bush reinstated it. And it's gone back and forth since then. So the ERLC has advocated for this life-saving policy. And we obviously strongly object to its rescission.
Chelsea, can you talk to us about the future of the Hyde Amendment? I know there's a lot of uncertainty about it in the future, and we would just love to hear what you guys are thinking, what you're seeing, what do you think we're going to need to be active on from our perspective? Fill us in on that.
Yeah, so quick refresher, the Hyde Amendment is an amendment that was introduced over 40 years ago by then Congressman Henry Hyde to prevent American taxpayer dollars from funding abortion. So the Mexico City policy, it prevents taxpayer dollars from funding abortion abroad, and the Hyde Amendment protects American taxpayer dollars from funding abortion domestically. So this amendment has enjoyed wide bipartisan support for over 40 years, and it's a rider, which means it is not the law of the land. It has to be reattached to the appropriations process each Congress. And again, it's been attached each Congress for 44 years and enjoyed that bipartisan support. In 2016, the Democratic platform included a desire to repeal this policy, and President Biden actually flipped on the policy leading up to his election as president. So for a long time, he had been a supporter of this pro-life amendment, and he flipped on that. So there is a lot of worry that the Hyde Amendment will be rescinded and American taxpayer dollars will go to fund abortion. And you know, one of the important things to know is, regardless of someone's view on abortion, we should all be able to agree that our taxpayer dollars should not go to fund it. So this week, Dr. Moore sent congressional leadership a letter urging them to include the Hyde Amendment and a few other key pro-life riders in the upcoming appropriations process.
Okay, that's a really helpful explanation. Actually, you raised a point that I don't think I realized I didn't understand. And my social media, like I've been guest hosting on this podcast, and I've been talking about what the ERLC is, what we're presenting on social media. And so you gave me an idea, Chelsea. I want to somehow figure out a way to create a graphic that demonstrates the difference between what the Hyde Amendment is and what the Mexico City policy is, and how they don't fund different kinds of abortion. So let me make sure I understand. The Mexico City policy allows taxpayer dollars to fund international abortions, and the Hyde Amendment prevents American tax dollars from funding abortions. Is that correct? Or did I
say Mexico City? Yeah, you switched it. Yeah. The Mexico City policy prevents American taxpayer dollars from funding abortions.
See, this
abortions.
Is why we need an infographic to put on our social media channels. I'll
there
try and get
go.
Working on that.
There we
but
go.
That was super helpful, Chelsea.
Thank you.
Yeah, Chelsea, that's super helpful. I always love you're able to condense something that is sometimes not my world at all into something that I can understand. And I really appreciate that. So what else are we watching right now in the pro-life front, policy, et cetera?
Yeah, so I mentioned that Dr. Moore had sent a letter to congressional leadership talking about Hyde. He also highlighted a number of other important pro-life riders. Hyde is probably the most well-known rider amendment that most folks know about, but there's a couple of other really important ones, and you know, we would argue that they're all important and all ought to be protected. We have an article on our website right now highlighting five, but just to briefly kind of go over a couple more that folks might not be quite as aware of. There's an amendment called the Dornan Amendment, which is basically Hyde Amendment protections for the District of Columbia. So the Hyde Amendment prevents federal taxpayer dollars from funding abortion, and D.C. is not a state, so the Dornan Amendment provides Hyde protections here in the district. And then there's a very important amendment called the Weldon Amendment, which protects the consciences of healthcare workers by ensuring that they don't have to participate in abortions or refer for abortions. And that amendment has gotten caught up in some court cases and whatnot, but it's a very important amendment. And then there's a couple of others. The Helms Amendment is actually the oldest pro-life rider, and it's very similar to the Mexico City policy. And then there's two others. I'll just briefly go over them. The Silchander Amendment and then the Kemp-Caston Amendment. So those are just five of many, many, because there are 12 appropriations bills funding different areas of our government. And each bill has different things in it that we watch as far as life is concerned. So if folks are interested in learning more about those riders, they can go to our website.
And I'll make a small plug here, Chelsea, for our EFL event that was last week. You were on a panel with Travis Wusso from DC as well. And you guys did a panel with two other people who work in this space. And it was super informative for me. And just talking about the good, the bad, and honestly, just a lot of ways that we can be praying for leadership and people in government about these pro-life policies. So if you want to learn more about that, check out our EFL from last week.
And you can find the replay for that on the ERLC YouTube channel. And you can also find that on our ERLC social channels, which we have talked about several times on here. And they'll also be in the show notes. Chelsea, I'm going to ask you one last question. Earlier in the podcast, we were discussing how people are having weird dreams in this stressful time of COVID. And I remembered that you had told me about a weird dream you had with coworkers. And I was just going to ask you about that, because I just remember that you had one with handbells and coworkers. Do you want to share about that? Do you remember it?
Yeah. Oh, I remember it. So yes, I've had so many weird dreams. And sometimes I wake up and think, where did that come from? And one of those, a couple months ago, I texted you, Julie, because you were in it. And it was you and Brent, and I forgot who else. I'm sure there was a few other people, but you two in particular. We had gone overseas. I can't remember exactly where to participate.
Wasn't it Switzerland or something?
It may have been.
Maybe it was
we
just Europe.
We participated in a handbell competition as adults
handbells.
In our lives. Yes. And who knows where it came from. Fun little factoid about myself. Growing up, I did play handbells.
I did, so maybe, too, Chelsea.
Yes. Maybe my brain accessed it somehow while I was sleeping. And, you know, you and Brent seem like the type of people who I would travel to Switzerland handbells. And play, or Scotland, and play handbells together. So that was my weird dream. One of many, but.
Oh, that's funny. Was one of them. I remember having a stressful week in the midst of the pandemic the past year that I had with Chelsea. And Chelsea and I were in Washington, D.C., and there was a march or something happening, and we saw something sketchy happening, and we were running away, and this person was trying to get us. And I guess I was feeling motherly towards Chelsea, and I grabbed her by the arm, and I shoved her behind my back, and I said, "Go away!" And I don't know what was up with
yeah,
that dream,
you did.
But I was protective of my friend. In her city that she knows better. Chelsea,
hey,
I'm sure
I'll
working
take all
in
the
a
protection.
Pandemic. Yeah. I'm sure working in a pandemic in Washington, D.C. during a pandemic, doing the work that you guys do has been stressful. So I'm sure you've had plenty of stressful dreams, and I'm sorry for those, even though, you know, I didn't start the pandemic.
Well, some are really funny, though.
Well, Chelsea, we just want to say thanks so much for taking the time to join us, especially for this last bit on the dreams, because I have been one of those people who has experienced both the strange and the pretty awful dreams during the pandemic, and I'll save most of those for another time. But seriously, we are so grateful for you and our DC colleagues and all the work you're doing. The pro-life movement and the cause of life is right at the center of what we do at the ERLC, and you guys are there on the front lines contending for human dignity, really, so that we can save children's lives. And so we are so grateful for you and for the work that you do. And thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Well, thank you. And I look forward to the next time I am on.
So now it's time for the lunchroom, where every week we tell you about the things that we've been talking about with one another. It's been a stem winder of an episode. So I'm going to go ahead and kick us off and go first. Here comes mine, which is, guys, Screech died. And I got to tell you, it's overwhelming to me, mostly because it just hits me right in my Saved by the Bell feels. Like, I'm just thinking about, you know, my childhood was defined by Zach Morris and how cool he was, and A.C. Slater and his muscles. Screech died. Very sad. He's only 44 years old. And so it's just been kind of a throw you off kilter kind of thing to see somebody who was like, you know, didn't think that that was that much older than me. And as a kid was in one of the most popular shows on television. And what a sad thing. So very sad, and definitely going to watch him Saved by the Bell in memoriam. Julie, you look like you're ready. What's on your mind?
Okay. This is a really random thing that I'm bringing to the table, but I have food on my brain. We have tried something new this year that I highly recommend for any parents with kids, is we do appetizers on Friday nights. In this world of COVID, where, you know, we're trying to not hang out with people and not really go out to eat, we have been going to Costco once a month and we get some fun appetizers and we throw them in our freezer. And every Friday night, we pick a movie, we pull out some appetizers, and we have an assortment of appetizers to eat. And that's our fun Friday night thing. And it's been great because we have fun food to look forward to. We're not going out. Honestly, it probably saves us money and the kids look forward to it. It's a great plan. So I highly recommend Costco appetizers on Friday night with your family. Easy peasy planning.
I love that idea, Julie. I love to just like, it's like a party, just graze on food. So that's super fun to plan it that way. I love like bite-sized mini food. If people know me, I love miniature things. So appetizers are miniature and awesome.
And remember the days where you actually could spend a Friday night just perusing around Costco and getting all the appetizers that you wanted to.
Oh, that's a good idea. Julie, you should set it up in multiple areas of your house and like pretend you're at Costco getting samples.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, but the thing idea. Is I don't think that's ever coming back. I think the pandemic
you
killed
know,
that.
We were there this week getting our February appetizers, and I felt really bad for the people at the stands because they have the stand with the glass thing, and he just stood there and recited what was great about that product that he was offering that you couldn't try. It was pretty sad.
Megan, you're up next. Tell us what's on your mind.
Okay, I have a question for everybody. Who has done a true cross-country road trip?
Definitely not me.
Nobody?
I've been up and down the East Coast, but I have not been across country.
Like across, like, yeah, ocean
in
to
one
ocean.
Trip.
Yeah, I've been from Tennessee to New Mexico and Arizona multiple times, like in a car or in a van.
Down this by the river.
Yeah. Shout out to my parents for forcing us at a young age to get in the car and drive cross country. Anyways, I guess my dad did that growing up. He lived in California and would travel back to North Carolina. But there's an article this week and the best ways to drive cross country. So if you've ever done it, I recommend actually planning it because I've been on some boring ones where you just feel like you're in Texas or Oklahoma forever. But there's some really cool stops along the way. But none of you guys seem to be really jazzed about a road trip.
I would rather fly if I can, but we did take a lot of road trips as children, but not entirely across the country. I mean, we would drive from Iowa to Virginia in one stint.
So this article highlights a lot of the fun things you can see, like you would not be able to see them if you took a plane from Tennessee to New Mexico, for instance. You would totally miss Cadillac Ranch, which none of you have been to, which is so fun, or the Wigwam Motel, or all kinds of things.
Sounds like a Cars movie.
Megan, no, I'm totally with you. I love road trips. As a matter of fact, I've always thought that if I ever wanted to change professions, I would have made a fantastic over-the-road truck driver. Like, I would love to own an 18-wheeler. Like, that actually may be a life goal someday, is just actually own one. I'm not really sure what I would do with it. Maybe just drive it around town a little bit. But, yeah, no, road trips. They're the way to go.
You can see so much more. There's so many different routes you can take from shore to shore. Josh, have you been up and down the East Coast? I want to go up and down the West Coast. I think that would be amazing. So anyways, I'm going to link the article in the show notes for anybody who would love a road trip because this is a great article.
No, I think that's a great idea, Megan, because we had some friends who early in the pandemic, they flew to the West Coast and drove, I think, from like Washington down to California and flew back from somewhere in Southern California, if I have that right. But road tripping is like an American pastime. The problem for me is that I absolutely hate driving. I don't mind doing it when I'm, you know, in the car with a bunch of people and it's very social and we can hang out and talk and do it. But me by myself, it is sheer misery unless I have the right audiobooks at the ready. Now, if I do, I'm in pretty good shape. But otherwise, yeah, I find driving to be incredibly tedious.
Well, this article links also music you should listen to, playlists,
oh, wow,
audiobooks, also good food stops. We love good food along the way. And you have to take friends. That's what makes a road trip. So anyways.
I think you've got your honeymoon planned then. Sounds like you're planning that honeymoon, Megan.
All right. So this one is mine, and it kind of picks up on a little bit of a theme that Julie had. Well, it's the Super Bowl. What Super Bowl party would be complete without talking about Super Bowl food? And so I found one of these Google Trends maps that looks at the food that, you know, various folks in different states are searching. So, okay, as I look at this map, let's just take some of the states around us. Julie, you are in Missouri, so you get to go first. What do you suppose is the top searched superfood or superfood, Super Bowl food, Super Bowl food from folks in Missouri?
Maybe wings or artichoke dip, possibly. I'm really not sure.
That's close. If you probably brought those together, you would hit it. Buffalo chicken dip.
Wow, I was really close.
You were really close. All right, Josh.
Big yes on the chicken dip. Big yes on the buffalo chicken dip.
Josh, what do you say for your home state of North Carolina?
What is the most common?
Yeah, what do you think is the most Googled in North Carolina?
You know, I honestly don't know. I'm afraid it's going to be something embarrassing like rice or whatever that thing was for Thanksgiving.
That's right. It's an appetizer.
Hopefully it's like nachos or something.
Pigs in a blanket.
Pigs in a blanket. That's not pigs that surprising. Although I got to tell you, I think pigs in a blanket are overrated. I'm very pro Julie's appetizer, like Friday night plan. I think appetizers are great. This pigs in a blanket are, they just don't do it for me.
Gotcha. Megan, in our home state of Tennessee, the number one search, well, do you want to guess?
I was going to say, it's got to be something simple like cheese dip or Velveeta or something like that.
Chili. Chili. I wouldn't have guessed chili either. But here's a couple that stood out to me. In Minnesota, the best they could come up with is Chex Mix. Seriously? Minnesota? What, like, is the cold weather getting to y'all up there? Like, let's actually introduce some real, like, Super Bowl food. And then not too far from there, over in Montana, I want to just say, what would y'all guess the number one search for Super Bowl food is in Montana? This totally
something
blew
to
my
do
mind.
Bison.
I was going to say, I hope the answer's steak.
Bison, steak, ribs.
Meatballs, maybe meatballs.
It's keto egg bites. Come on,
wow,
y'all.
I did not see that coming from Montana.
What is
for
happening
Wyoming?
Up in Montana?
Montana.
I'm going to give my Montanan friends, I don't have any idea how you say a person who's a native of Montana, but in any case, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that they already know how to cook food, so maybe it is like the seven people on the keto diet who looked this up, but everybody else was just already ready to go.
There you
That's
go.
That's amazing.
Exactly. That might be what it is. So anyways, we'll link for this in the show notes, but it's always, you know, a really interesting map and a good conversation starter. So That's what I was bringing to the virtual lunchroom this week, y'all.
I'm really hungry now.
All right, guys. Well, we want to say thanks so much for listening. This is going to do it for this episode, but we are really, really grateful, as we mentioned earlier, for your support, for listening to the show every week. If you want to support the podcast, you can help spread the word by sharing this episode on social media or going into your podcast app and leaving us a rating or a brief review. I want to say thanks so much to everyone who has done that just in these last couple of weeks. It has been really encouraging, and it really does help more people discover the show. But for Brent and Julie and Megan and myself, we want to say thanks so much for listening, and we look forward to being back next week with more content.